Hello everyone. Welcome to episode number 9 of our series in which we are studying End Times Bible Prophecy, based upon the series we have titled the Bible Prophecy Masterclass. In this, which might be considered part 3a of the discussion begun in episode number 5, we are still in Ezekiel 38 verses 10 to 23. Thus, we are continuing to flesh out the desires and/or the cravings and anxieties that God defines as hooks, i.e., nose rings, through the nose that will be used to bait and thereby draw Gog and his coalition of nations into the trap he has set for them in Eretz Israel. As usual, the text for this study is Volume 2 of the series called Judgment Day, Prelude to Armageddon, Part 2, Israel Catapulted to Global Superpower, the writer of said series being Mr. Alvin Mitchell, and I am Liam, your affable host. Please feel free to join us as we invoke the blessing of God upon this and all of the studies to come in this highly informative and instructive series. The nose ring of insecurity. Without specifying why, 70s theological and prophetic rumor mill had it that communist Russia had been eyeing Israel, for some time, as a strategic point from which they could control the world. This thought, too, is most compelling when one considers that it has been said that the most convenient route for the flow of oil out of the Middle East to the rest of the world is through the land of the Jews. With 2/3 of global supplies stored in that area, assuming the foregoing is true, control of God's country would indeed place the holder, like Russia, in a unique position of considerable clout. If she can knock Israel off, Jordan would not be a problem, and all the other Arab nations, for the time being, are in Russia's corner. Others like the Chinese as well as Great Britain, and the Germans will be eyeing with ambition this same piece of prime real estate, realizing its value, but she will have the high ground, as it were the high ground being in this case Israel. From that vantage point she can practically dictate the terms of war with any detractors, insofar as she and the Arab world will control the lion's share of all the world's crude and natural gas. The top three producers of crude are all in that general part of the world, the Saudis, the Iranians, and the Russians, in that order. No nation today can wage war without adequate supplies of petroleum and its derivatives. For reasons to be covered later, no one will be able to match her military might, built around her nuke arsenal, even as she languishes, though weak and, apparently, suffering the pangs of many setbacks, she is still nevertheless, as she is quick to point out, a force to be reckoned with. This, no one is likely to question. No nation will have her resources. It will therefore be in the best interests of all to stand with her, if current interpretations and understandings surrounding what is knowable of the history of Gomer hold any water at all, then, certain if not all the key factions of the Celtic peoples including the Germans, will be confederate with the Russo-Islamic Federation. That is, Gomer is in all likelihood a reference to all of Western Europe, particularly those areas once peopled and dominated by the Celts. Thus, it appears Russia will come, having gotten this point across already. With the Jews gone, and a beachhead in Palestine, Russia, it will think, can buy a moment's peace of mind, and a bit of security from the enemy most likely and most capable of exploitation in her time of weakness. Given the aforementioned nose rings, it cannot be, but that, the security, of knowing she does not have to contend with the presence of the self-styled Jew any longer, will be a prime motivator driving her against the people of God, into the arms of a hellish destruction. Realistically, but for these reasons, there does not appear on the surface to be any other good, solid nose ring on earth as to why a nation 876.2 times bigger than Israel would ever want to bypass much larger lands, only to invest heavily in the conquest of something so small except as it be, as we have been told, for the hand of Almighty God. Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 10-11. So, in conclusion, why? Why the need for so heavy a hand, in a matter seemingly so small and otherwise insignificant? Why the stealth, the haste, and so crushing a force, in the presence of so tiny an objective? Firstly, although there is no one to stop them, no one to stand in her way, time is, nonetheless, of the essence, as Russia's financial/economic strait is such that she can ill afford to get embroiled in a protracted, drawn-out battle with anyone. Thus, in light of their economic plight and their shortage of manpower, whatever the Russians do militarily, they must do quickly, with deadly force, and with as little encumbrance and opposition as possible. Although their numbers gap between what they have and what they want will be magnificently bridged by the combined forces of their allies, the longer any given offensive takes, the greater the cost both in terms of rubles and bodies, hence the greater the possibility of defeat, were things to progress normally, that, in spite of their being supposedly the best-equipped military force in the world. Get in, get the job done, kill and get rid of the Jew quickly and efficiently, and her security is virtually guaranteed, as evinced by Putin's recent response to Bush's current saber-rattling campaign and peddling of his missile defense shield plan in Eastern Europe. Russia knows and is confident that none is likely to challenge her quest for dominance as long as they know she has 1,700 to 2,000 nuclear-tipped warheads, many easily independently retargetable, virtually hanging over their heads, breathing down their necks. Putin and some of his top hands angrily countered with a little saber-rattling of their own, as they touted the defense-cracking capabilities of two new instruments of mass death recently added to their arsenal. See Appendix G. The Nose Ring of Association. Verse 11. As of August 3, 2012, both Russia and China have not only been snuggling closer and closer commercially, they have also drawn closer politically in a show of affinity with and sympathy toward Muslim causes, such as Syria's murderous attempt to put down the latest in Middle Eastern uprisings and Iran's refusal to stop its uranium enrichment initiative. This in strong opposition to US-led UN calls for tighter sanctions against either. Everyone knows that should Israel ever feel or have what it deems is just cause for suspicion relative to any threat posed by Iran, she won't hesitate to strike. Iran has and maintains apparently strong economic ties to Russia on a number of fronts, not the least of which is arms. Until the 1979 uprising, Persia's military is said to have been built around Western hardware. Thereafter, until about 10 years or so ago, most Iranian arms have been mainly of Russian, Brazilian, Chinese, and Korean manufacture, which it is said to reverse engineer and manufacture in-house, so as to reduce its dependence on foreign suppliers. Nonetheless, it is these nations to whom the Persians turned after 79 for help laying the foundations for this independence. More significantly, Iran is Russia's biggest trading partner. http://www.youtube.com/watch?v=nwdsekusk, and trade routes for Russian goods through Iran to India and Asia as well as to Europe and vice versa could prove highly beneficial and lucrative to all, when all the details are ironed out and agreed upon. Currently, according to the above video, goods from India, for instance, must travel a long sea route in order to reach the West. One can only assume that there is political and diplomatic discord between the Persians and the Indians. For these reasons, one can well understand Russia's steadfast resistance to calls for tighter sanctions at this hour. That said, furthermore, per Ezekiel 38 verse 11, Russia's determination to strike Israel while her guard is down, while she is not looking, her back is turned and she is feeling secure, no doubt a false security brought on by some sort of treaty, the Russians are said to be known for not honoring treaties, becomes all the more understandable. If Israel senses a threat, from any direction, whether Iran or Russia, she will hit the biggest threat closest to her, which is now, and will be then, Iran. Knowing that any threat to Iran is a major threat to its economic stability, it is not difficult to see that it is in Russia's strategic best interest to win the trust of the Jews, superficial window dressing to camouflage its malicious intent, bide its time, in hope of a window of opportunity and a moment of weakness. Thus, the solution to any perceived threat to Russo-Iranian relations is an overwhelming, preemptive first strike at a time when Israel is least likely to expect one. A world of indifference. Where is the US and or the UK? It is tough to say right at the moment where the British stand, as far as alliance with Jews goes. After all, their wavering, backstabbing and foot-dragging threatened to and almost did shut the Jew out of his homeland, again, even as he prepared to re-enter, just prior to 1948. America may well be the only true friend, however far that goes, that the Jews have, with the exception of maybe one Muslim nation said to maintain diplomatic relation with the West and or Israel, contrary to normal Arab practice, which may well explain why that one nation is portrayed standing around looking with what appears to be the West during the incursion. But, as God has painted this portrait of apparent, impending doom for his newly resettled people, one has to ask, what is wrong with this picture? Interestingly, in contrast to the outpouring of international support we see being lavished upon Ukraine today, at October 20, 2022, on account of the Russian invasion, no matter who or how many of its friends now, none is shown rushing to Israel's aid, as she lingers unwittingly in the path of a cruel advance, a crushing onslaught obviously bent upon obliterating the Jew once and for all. Why? What might this tell us about the only superpower still afloat, today at least, if not tomorrow? For even the most casual student of the Bible's prophecy, perhaps one of the most appalling sights of all in the prophetic portrait of the end times is that of the most visible, most high-profile nation of all times, i.e., these, our very own United States of America. Most conspicuous largely, if not solely by its puzzling absence, it is baffling, to say the least, when one considers that he cannot talk international politics, economics/trade, entertainment, sports, music, the arts, whatever, you name it, etc., without mention of the greatest of all nations trying to imagine why, or, how the all-seeing, all-knowing Almighty God of all the universe would or could ever miss so potent a presence as that of the one nation today which means so much to the sustenance and survival of the apple of his eye, the people of his Messiah. What does this mean? While it is virtually certain that the Britons will be here, will America be able to even peer above the horizon to see what is happening? Will she even care, if she is here? For sure, directly or indirectly, the U.S. is not on God's radar screen, for good, for evil, perhaps, as will be shown later, but, certainly not for good this contrary to the thinking and teaching of the nation's top Bible teacher/preacher and prophecy scholars. Is that in itself a good sign, or, is it a bad sign? How can this be? How can he recognize the presence of a depleted power like Russia, the remnant of Reagan's evil empire, and not acknowledge the presence of a greater power so close, and so vital to the existence of his people, at so crucial an hour? In some key areas, at this moment, the U.S. is a dependent nation, heavily dependent upon foreign oil, or was at one time, less so now, thanks to advances in the extraction of oil and gas from shale rock, and dependent upon South Africa for its chrome, so necessary in many aspects of American industry. And, we are slowly digging ourselves into ruts and maybe an early grave, daily, in other areas, to wit, heavy indebtedness to third world nations like China, subjection to the will of illegal immigrants of which there are believed to be more than 12 million from impoverished third world neighbors like Mexico, as well as those more dangerous and deadly elements of Islamic persuasion, from Muslim countries. Since no one will come to Israel's rescue during the Slav/Viking strike, and since no one, given the circumstances, must of necessity include the U.S., is this an indication that we are no longer a force to be reckoned with, upon the global stage, or, will we have simply joined ranks with those of the apathetic and unconcerned? Truthfully, in light of the determination, the daring, and the brutality of the assault, and, in light of a lack of any manifest concern for possible resistance from any Israeli allied forces, either slash or scenario would certainly seem to be the case, remember that Russia was a superpower, until it collapsed in 1991, Great Britain was a world empire until World War II drained its resources, thereby weakening its grip on its remaining colonies, hence, in light of the potential pact within a weapon known as the pulse generator, the crippling effect it could have on a country the size of the U.S., and the current rush by Iran, North Korea, and China to each acquire one, all being enemies of the U.S. whose image grows more tarnished in foreign eyes with the dawn of each new day, it is not entirely inconceivable that America may well have been brought to its knees. In fact, now that this study of the Book of the Revelation is completed, it is not at all inconceivable. Consider Judgment Day. Part 1 Prelude to Armageddon. Part 1. The United States of America in Bible Prophecy covering Revelation 18 Babylon the Great. Moreover, God's portrait indicates that every nation close to Israel will be well aware of the attack. The entire world will be fully apprised of the Russian invasion yet will effectively do positively nothing. Sheba and Dedan are modern-day Saudi Arabia, while Tarshish is said to be England, some say maybe Spain, certainly a nation that is very distant. The young lions are without doubt those nations which are, or which at one time made up the only truly global kingdom, upon which the sun never set, the United Kingdom or Great Britain. The young lions would thus include the United States of America, India, Taiwan, etc. The most diplomatic resolution sought at this time, as seen from on high, amounts to no more than pathetic gestures, lip service, in the form of useless sanctions that do nothing to stop the aggressors. Given that this is not the Battle of Armageddon, whatever the size of this grand attack, and in spite of its scale, it will not involve every nation on earth sending a hostile military delegation, as it were. Like the English, who stuck their heads into the sand, ignoring their promise to entreaty with the Polish, to come to each other's aid in time of war, during the days of Hitler's rampage, and like the Russians who, thanks to Stalin, signed a non-aggression treaty with him, not realizing the German monster's determination to enslave the Slav, so likewise, these friends, by all outward appearances, appear to have salved their eyes with the sands of non-aggression. Thus, while indeed, they see the evil day pounce upon the Jew, will have chosen to hear no evil, as well as to speak no evil. This might be partially understandable, given the Russ's military might, whatever its many weaknesses on account of which he may well come in a state of desperation as well, and its nuclear stockpile. In addition, while it is still at best a question mark now, Iran could have the nuke then as well, and no one questions whether it will deploy it. All will know and see, yet none, including the U.S., will render assistance to the Jews, unlike is true of the Ukraine-Russian invasion, where all of the EU major powers are rallying behind the Ukrainians and where nations like Sweden, formerly committed to sticking their heads in the sands of non-aggression, are now scrambling to join NATO and preparing for potential conflict with Russia themselves. This text does not suggest any kind of support will be forthcoming from anywhere on behalf of Israel. Verse 13, Sheba and Dedan, and the travelers and peddlers from the land of Tarshish, in concert with her young lions, will say to you, "Are you come to pillage, rob, and steal? Is your intent to take away silver and gold, to carry away cattle and goods, to do a great plunder?" As of August 3, 2012, one need only look to the Middle East at the international attempt to steer Iran away from its uranium enrichment agenda, and the Syrian atrocity, latest movement in what has been termed the Arab Spring, or uprising, to get an idea of what Ezekiel most probably had in mind here: 20,000 dead and counting, and all the international community can do, led by the USA, is throw up a volley of threats, mostly sanctions, should Basharaf and company deploy any of Syria's known stockpile of biological and chemical weapons. Who gives a damn how many people are currently being killed by conventional weapons? It appears to be, or is, actually, the reaction of a coalition of nations, self-charged with perhaps the business of maintaining peace in that region, who, like the UN now, are hopelessly ineffective at that task. In the thick of crisis, at the precise moment of truth, they stand by idly, engaged in what amounts to nothing more than lip service with the evident hostile aggressors, which in turn amounts to not much more than trying to stop the deadliest of military assaults by a mere sticking out of the tongue. The presence of the Lord. Verses 15, 18, and, "So, you will come out of your standing in the northernmost quarters, you, and a multitude of people at your side, every one of them mounted, a huge consortium, a strong army. And when that happens, at the point where Gog finally sets foot in Eretz Yisrael, says Adonai Jehovah, then will my fury show in my face, verse 19, 20, because in my jealousy, in the fire of my indignation I have spoken, most assuredly in that day the land of Israel will be greatly shaken, so that every oceanic fish, the birds and insects of the air, the wild animals of the fields, along with every other created thing upon the earth, as well as men the world over, all will shake at my presence, when mountains will be thrown down, cliffs will fall, as every wall will collapse to the ground. Day of humiliation. Russia's military is going down. It is important to note that, in fact, God's trap is not so much a slam directly against the Russian people, although most assuredly they will not be left unaffected, as rather, his aim is on the Russian leadership in the Duma, of which Gog is the head, and its armies. The same holds true for all the allies. And rightly so, for it is from pools of the rank and file of all these nations and the remaining nations of the world that the tribulation saints will be drawn. The destruction of the armies of these nations, one might therefore conclude, is but a softening up routine, a wake-up call by means of which God will begin to make himself known to men, in ways he would otherwise, ordinarily deem undesirable, where his foolish churches have failed, refused or, simply made the winning of souls difficult or impossible by conventional means. His goal is to win and save as many people as possible before the not-too-distant end, effectively, by whatever means it takes, even if the means he employs, or permits, literally scares the ever-living hell out of him, as in some cases it doubtless will. At this juncture, as shown already, Israel will be on its own where worldly alliances are concerned. No one will come to his aid. The Lord has chosen that Scripture should remain silent in terms of why, beyond the obvious fact of his glory and recognition. In addition to all other possibilities, there is the very real possibility that the rest of the world, including the US and the UK, have simply grown weary of the Jew question, and are simply glad for its eradication, by whatever means possible and practical. After all, though he is very much in the plan, mind, and eyes of Adonai Jehovah, he is still out of the will of God, and so is not likely to conduct himself in a manner conducive to good relationships with his neighbors, near or far. They will still be plotting his demise, even when he is on good terms with them. And so, they all look the other way as Russia and its Islamic accomplices move in for the kill, a sure kill. What could be easier, given the incredible presence and overwhelming power of the invading forces? The situation looks not only bleak, it is downright hopeless, for the tiny nation 876.2 times smaller than the main force alone, the driving thrust behind the deadly, diabolical attack. Just when it looks like the end is near, however, all is lost, a mutiny will break out, as Adonai Yahweh will instigate a breakdown in relationships between the unholy Confederate alliance of Catholic Slav/Viking Federation and the Islamic Arabs. All the various Arab armies which would normally be fighting each other anyway, but for the presence of Israel as the chief, central focus of their frustrations, will turn on and fight one another, to the Finisherite Muslims against Sunni Muslims, etc. Truth being stranger than fiction, it has been said, it is very strange indeed that there is not the slightest hint of casualty or fatality among the people of God. There is no indication that the Jew will ever have to lift a finger on his own behalf, not that it could possibly do any good, given the odds, even though the battle will be fought in his backyard, having been planned and waged with his name on it. Apparently, the deceitfulness, swiftness, and the magnitude of the attack will be such that, should the Almighty fail to act in Israel's defense, there may not be time for him to react, in which case the objective of the Jews' long-standing adversaries would at long last be achieved. For this we know, and the world knows, given the occasion and demand, he will fight, and he will fight valiantly, with skill and great precision. Sidebar. In the early moments of Jewish life as a nation of people, God intervened directly on behalf of both him and his 11 brothers, reversing their misfortunes suffered at the hands of the Egyptians during their 400 or so, years in the land of Goshen. Thereafter, at major turning points in their lives and history, the enemy always won, always per the will of God. The Assyrians destroyed the 10 northern tribes, so that they never recovered. The Babylonians decimated what was left, in the southern kingdom, for 70 years, following revival of the nation under Cyrus the Persian, across 400 more years of rebellion, per the Lord Jesus' own prediction. Titus the Roman general executed the vengeance and wrath of the Lord in 70 AD, the nation ceased to be for almost 2,000 years, Jerusalem was given over to heathen control as the Jews were dispersed among the nations where they would remain until the time of God's dealing with the Gentiles was completed. From the time of the rebirth of Israel in 1948, until the present, at August 13, 05, all battles for survival on home turf have been decided in favor of the Jews. And so it will be when in the future, perhaps near, Catholic Russia and its Arab-Islamic jihadists converge on the Holy Land, the first of two of the last major incursions into the land, this side of the millennial reign, the last being Armageddon, the Lord will rise up strong once more on behalf of his beleaguered people, driving the foot of a devastating defeat deep within their ranks, so that virtually all will be wiped out, upon the mountains of Israel. Verses 21-22, I will summon a sword against him all over my mountains, says Adonai Yahweh, every soldier's weapon will be turned, so that he fights against his fellow soldiers, and I, myself, will join the fracas against the attacker with pestilence, or plagues, disease-causing agents, and with blood, and I will rain upon him, his armies, and upon all the multitudes with him torrential rains, enormous hailstones, fire, and sulfur. By way of this overwhelming, wrenching of victory from the jaws of what should have been certain doom, and a sure defeat, the Lord God of all the universe will etch himself indelibly upon the minds and consciences of both his heretofore, otherwise hapless and helpless, hopeless and apathetic people, the Israelis, as well as upon an anxiously watching but Christ-hating, God-rejecting world at large. Verse 23, this is how I will introduce and elevate myself into their thinking, and set myself apart before their eyes. In so doing, I will then be known in the eyes of many nations, and they will know that I am Jehovah, Yahweh, the self-existing, eternal One. If ever there was any doubt in any man's mind as to whether the invisible, intangible God had the power to project himself physically into the affairs of men, affecting militarily the intervention he proposes via the Jewish prophecies, contending supernaturally, pitting the simple elements of nature against the might of the world's leading powers and their sophisticated weaponry, a might, and a killing potency never before known to mankind. The natural catastrophes of recent years should be more than adequate to quell any such doubts. As of today, August 30, 05, it could very well be argued that God's attempt to focus all eyes upon him and his ability to unleash and focus or channel the energies and elements of nature to his liking, has in reality already begun. In addition to deadly earthquakes in Japan, Turkey, and Pakistan and recent, record flooding all around the world, in Europe, Russia, and Asia, Hurricane Katrina, contrary to normal hurricane protocol slash practice of starting somewhere off the coasts of Africa, birthed itself into being somewhere in or near U.S. waters, leaving weather forecasters and those in its projected path practically thumbing their nose at its comparatively weak beginnings, prior to quickly escalating to a tune-shifting category. 5 Monster, the mother of all such storms it seems, which has now shut down an entire major U.S. city, a whopping 80% of which, New Orleans, Louisiana, is presently underwater. That same storm system has wreaked major havoc in Biloxi, Mississippi, and other places along the southern U.S. coastline, where she angrily trampled ashore. Then, there is the earthquake-spun tsunami of December 2004, followed more recently by another devastating, earthquake-driven one in the Solomon Islands April 1, 07. Whereas it was centered off the southern coast of India, it rapidly bore subtle, silent, relentless, far-reaching tentacles of fury and misery, delivering death, at speeds of up to 500 miles per hour, to in excess of 150,000 lost souls, all along a destructive swath spanning 3,000 miles. Biblical indicators are such that God's wrath will rain down upon the armies of the Russian Federation, the European Union and their Arabic accomplices trapped in Israel's mountains, as well as the world at large during the apocalypse, unexpectedly, as life goes on, as usual. And yet, it certainly will not be as if they have not been forewarned. In addition to the God-induced mutiny, giving way to its own man-made hell, the armies of Israel's marauding invaders will in turn be victimized by God's fury packaged in a natural calamity far worse than anything experienced in the Gulf Coast or South Central Asia, or the Solomons. Here there will be no chance for recovery, though a fraction of the Russians will be spared as we shall see. Truly, as we have seen and as we shall see going forward in all of our future studies and lessons, God's determination to garner man's undivided attention, if not his affection, is indomitable. His power, even when filtered and tempered through the natural elements of this world and universe, is matchless and unstoppable. And on this note, we will end today's edition of the Bible Prophecy Masterclass podcast. Let me encourage you, each and every one, to make it your priority to be with us again on the next podcast, number 10, when we will pick up here, where we leave off today. Do tell others about the program, won't you? And as we go, may God richly bless you.